Now, Christmas cards, I suppose, this year more than any other year have become very, very important. And if you have an array of them on your own mantelpiece right now, or indeed if you sent out an array of them, they may well have featured some wonderful winter scenes. Some of the images are from as far back as Renaissance masters, but you'll find impressionists and more modern work like our own Harry Clark in amongst those images as well, if you bought in one of the galleries when they were still opened, unfortunately. Well, we asked Jessica Fahey to look at some classic winter scenes in art and to track us through those images how art and artists' relationship with the winter landscape has changed over the years and over the centuries. You've chosen a great variety for us, Jessica, but I was quite surprised just how recent, really, the idea of the winter scene is in terms of cards, calendars and diary. You're bringing us to the Limburg brothers to start out.
Yes. So essentially, the first time we see winter scenes are actually in illuminated manuscripts, particularly Books of Hours, which were essentially the bestsellers of their day because everybody needed one to remind them what prayers to say at which festivals and different sort of reminders of how to keep living well, essentially. So we have the first winter scenes as illuminated manuscripts, and the most famous illuminated manuscript from late medieval, which we would call sort of international Gothic or early Renaissance, is from the Limburg brothers. And it was a book of hours for the Duke of Berry, who was King John II of France's third son and known to be this great patron of art. And it was incredibly expensive to make at the time and has been often called today the most expensive book in the world. And the scene for winter, perhaps surprisingly, is for February. So we have a kind of calendar which has, you know, the zodiac symbols and things like that. And then underneath it, we have a scene of winter representing February. And it's basically people going about activities that they would usually do in the winter. And this was, as I say, like the sort of earlier forms of what we would have in relation to winter scenes. And then that kind of progresses over time. But initially, they tend to be just of people going about the labours of the day, essentially.
And in the particular, in those, that book of ours, the blue colour in it is so vibrant. It's actually an extraordinary colour of blue. But let us move ourselves on to Peter Bruegel, the elder we're speaking about here, I suppose the beginning to the middle of the 16th century, 1525, 1569, when he was, rough dates of his life, the hunters in the snow. This is a very familiar image and wonderful. You can almost shiver looking at it. It has that great thing of the snow on the ground, but those black trees up against the winter sky.
Absolutely. It's possibly one of the best known winter scenes and has been described, as you mentioned, Christmas cards, and been described as the most common secular subject to find on a Christmas card. For its time, it is actually unusual because it's taking the calendar winter scene and painting it on a panel rather than illuminated manuscript and on a very large scale. So the painting is over a metre by a metre and a half, and this was particularly unusual. It was also commissioned by a merchant from Antwerp. So what we see really here is the change in the type of people commissioning works and the types of works they want to see. We also have this coming after the Reformation, so religious subjects aren't as popular or accepted in Northern Europe. But from the perspective of the popularity of this scene, I think it is what you said. It's that idea of it really captures the feeling of winter and this wonderful vast landscape. So we kind of have scenes, figures and dogs in the foreground who are the hunters, and they're on a much larger scale than this vast expanse of a valley with frozen lakes that people are playing various different games on. And as typical with Northern art, you can kind of read into this maybe a moral message of, you know, there's hard times in winter, but there's also good fun to be had too. And it's the type of painting that really benefits from close examination. So we can kind of see this as an entertainment piece as well as a moral piece, because like there's one guy on the ice who's fallen clearly flat in his face and everyone's just sort of skating around him as if they haven't noticed. So there's always a little comic element in there as well.
You also chose for us winter winter landscape with the bird trap. This is from 1565, towards the end of the life of Peter Breggel the Elder. But it really struck me, it's a kind of a softer type of feel off it, which perhaps leads into one of the other choices you make, which is Hendrik Everkamp, who's very much of the Breggel school. And the Everkamp, if I'm saying his name correctly, piece is called Scene on the Ice. Yeah. It's a kind of a, there are softer lines involved here, but we're still on the ice.
Yes. So Everkamp was very much influenced by Breggel, and the Everkamp that we're talking about is actually in the National Gallery in Dublin. So when it's open again, people can go in and have a look. Mm. It's also, both of these are on a much smaller scale. So I think that's part of the reason why you'd notice that difference. The other thing about it is that arguably these works, particularly Breggel's winter landscape with the bird trap, are perhaps a little bit more about a kind of moral, particularly the bird trap, sometimes understood as representing the bird representing the soul and the trap representing the devil. So there may well be kind of a slightly more serious tone to it. In terms of Everkamp, though, it's not necessarily including that kind of moral message, and actually seems to be a little bit more about just showing the fun activities in winter. But these works were extraordinarily popular. So the bird trap painting, for example, was copied over 120 times by Breggel's sons and other artists later. Similar with Everkamp, he was famous throughout Europe and people wanted copies of these scenes. So even though they weren't necessarily rated by, you know, the kind of art critics like Vasari and people like that, or, you know, later art critics, they were really popular with people. And right. That's something I find really fascinating about them. And, you know, it is like watching this lovely little kind of group of short stories. You know, you go from one group to the next of groups of figures and see, you know, kind of try and make a story of what's going on.
Yeah, very characterful figures within the paintings, it has to be said. Suzuki Harunobu, who am I talking about here? Japanese artist?
Yes, exactly. So of the Edo period, so the time, in fact, when there was a ban between exporting works from Japan to Europe. And in fact, it was a time of sort of isolation for Japan where they didn't want influence from outside. But it's also this time of a great growth in the middle classes too. So similar to what we were looking at with the Northern European artists, and the types of subjects they wanted tended to be things that, again, are a little bit more reflective of everyday life. And you get more of these kind of sweet and cute scenes like Winter Play, which is in the Victorian Albert Museum, which are two little children building this kind of snow dog. And it's very kind of cartoony, as we would recognize it today. And these were incredibly popular once that ban was opened between Japan and Europe from about 1868. And you start to have that very strong influence then of Japanese art on European painting. So they're very interesting from the Japanese perspective, but also their influence on European art.
I should have said too that the images that we're speaking about are available on our Twitter page if you want to look at them as we're speaking about them at RTE Arena. Sure. We'll give you a sense into them. Love this. I suppose it's really a self-portrait as portrait as landscape is what we're talking here. And we're talking about an artist called Rosalba Carriera and her piece Self-Portrait as Winter. Love her blue outfit.
Isn't it incredible? Yeah, absolutely. And she was an extraordinary artist. And it's one of those things where we find that our concept of the female artist is very distorted by the way that history has been written, because we're kind of often led to believe that there weren't any great female artists. But she was one of the most famous artists of her day. She travelled around Europe. She worked for all the royal families. And, you know, certain collectors would buy hundreds of her pastel works. And she really brought pastel as a medium to the fore, particularly for portraits. And she was famous for her portraits because the grand tourists who would come and visit her in Venice wanted these very flattering portraits. And the softness of the pastel style and the way that she could, you know, create the textures and all the fashionable details made her extraordinarily popular. But this is interesting because it is a self-portrait, and we don't know that much about the history in terms of whether it was commissioned or something she chose to do herself. But she's wearing what looks like ermine fur, which wouldn't be normal for an artist to wear, because that was usually reserved for the upper classes and nobility. And the blue, in fact, as well, is a very expensive colour, the ultramarine, coming from modern-day Afghanistan, so from the lapis lazuli stone. So something that, again, kind of emphasises how expensive she looks here with these beautiful pearl earrings as well. The thing that drew my attention to it is that it kind of looks like Santa's outfit, but in blue, which is interesting because the painting or the pastels from 1731.
It has that Santa feel of it, right enough. Let me move on. There is a lovely image that you suggested, winter landscape from Caspar David Friedrich, but I want to move on to the Turners that you that you suggested to us. Snowstorm, steamboat off harbour's mouth. And this was first exhibited in 1842. It's at the Tate Britain in London. I mean, such a swirl of paint really on this canvas, isn't there?
It's an extraordinary painting. And it's actually relatively large too. So when you stand in front of it, it's very overpowering. And it's this kind of vortex of, you know, wave and cloud and kind of chaos. And it's something that, you know, Turner was very interested in, that kind of drama, and in particular the idea of the romantic sublime, which is the sort of power of nature, which he understood as the power of God, which then, you know, reminds us of our kind of mortality, our insignificance in a way, and it creates this kind of heightened effect of fear. So if we think about it in terms of the disaster movies of today, it's kind of the, you know, Victorian 19th century equivalent of that. But the famous story about this painting is that he claimed, even though he was 67 when he was painting this, he claimed that he in fact had been on this steamboat and that he'd asked the sailors to lash him to the mast so that he could experience the storm and be able to paint it later, which seems like possibly an exaggeration.
Never let the truth
get
in the way.
This tells you a lot about Turner.
It does indeed. Finally, I just want to skip on to Harry Clarke because I don't want to miss this one, The Snow Queen. Beautiful piece that you have here. Finally, Jessica.
Yes. No, it's absolutely beautiful. It's in the National Gallery of Ireland, and it is, you know, his illustration at its best. And we all, you know him very well for his stained glass work, but actually he worked a lot as an illustrator in what's often described as the Beardsley style. So this very fine, you know, pen and ink with beautiful patterns, bright colours, and it's this kind of love of fantasy and weirdness and very highly, highly stylized. But I think for me it's one of the, you know, Christmas cards that I know the best. Because it's always on sale in the National Gallery.
Yeah, and let's hope that the galleries will be back open soon. Obviously, restrictions now are kicking back in and things have changed from what we may have wanted. However, Jessica Fahey, thanks very much for a ski stop tour of wonderful winter scenes for us this evening. And that is our lot for tonight. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields researched. Janice Murphy was the broadcast coordinator. Sound supervision this evening was by Andrew Kane. And tonight's programme was produced by Ola McGowan. Talk to you tomorrow night once again, 7 o'clock.